These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's always those, you know, the teams that you seem to match up well and you know, are very similar, you know, hockey clubs. So I don't know the reason, but, you know, they've always, every game, certainly this year, been, you know, real good games, real intense hockey games. So, you know, it'll be a lot of fun, obviously, if that's how it shakes out.
Fired up, boys.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Fired up, boys. We'll see how it shakes out.
Rays with Kirill and Kevin Fiala. They're going to take us to the promised land. I'm ready.
Go, keep going. This is great. You're freestyling right now. Go.
Cab Talbot, please don't screw this up.
Gentlemen, the state of hockey is back to the state of playoff hockey starting this weekend. You can find the full nerd deep dive on Judd's Hockey Show. I know you guys are going to be releasing an episode, a preview episode of Judd's Hockey Show, if it's not already out by the time you're consuming this right now. But this is Mackie and Judd. It's an action movie rewind Friday, Kickboxer, the 1980s classic that we're going to dive into. And got a few things to say about the Minnesota Twins. But, boys, let's start with a little Mackie and Judd play the odds here. Just a trip over to actionnetwork.com. And I don't know, I'm having a hard time seeing what the Wild Stanley Cup odds are through all the shade on this website. All the shade here, okay? I'm just going to start at the top.
Okay.
I'm going to start at the top here. I'm going to go through, and I'm going to give you this in the like plus 200 cents. So instead of giving you, well, I'll try to translate these on the fly and see if my math works out so that we can put these in layman's terms, but Let's see what these are. The consensus. They're taking all the sports books, the consensus odds to win the Stanley Cup, okay? Colorado Avalanche, 4.5 to 1.
Okay.
That's fair, right?
Yep.
Yes.
So the odds on favorite.
Yes.
Right? The Las Vegas Golden Knights, 5.5 to 1. Okay.
They were the second best team. That's fair.
Okay. The Maple Leafs, 6.5 to 1. Hurricanes and Lightning, both 7.5 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Bruins 12 to 1, Penguins 12 to 1,
and then the
same
Wild,
the Capitals,
and then the Wild.
Sorry, I'm again. It's a little
shady here, dude.
So.
You got to read every team. You can't just skip the Wild.
No, I am. I'm literally going in order here. Panthers 15 to 1.
Oh, thank God, get out of
here! Literally
putting
a Florida hockey team.
Hold on a second,
Minnesota hockey team.
I will not have this. I will not have you skipping the Wild on this list, Phil. This isn't funny anymore.
The Islanders 18 to 1.
My team.
Okay.
It is my team.
The Oilers 19 to 1. And now we get to the Wild at 20 to 1, all the way down, sort of like mid to late pack there. Your guys' thoughts?
You know how it's a cliche, and often in sports the respect thing is just BS.
No respect.
It's like no respect. It's
no
like
respect.
It's like, bleep you, you get respect. You'll get respect if you deserve respect. This one actually is a legitimate no respect. I mean, think about the list of teams. And look, I think the top of the list is very, very fair. But think about the list of teams that you just ran down. The Florida Panthers are a good team, okay? But the Minnesota Wild was in what ultimately at the top, not the entire thing, what ultimately at the top had the two best teams, I believe, in the entire league, okay? They played those teams competitively throughout the course of the season. They finished in third place, and despite their struggles against the Blues, where they were god-awful, they finished in third place very convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a center who I love, but they've got much improved goaltending, starting with Talbot. The defensive core is good. They've got Kaprizov. This is legitimately no respect. Like, I'm not expecting them to be at the top, gentlemen, but 20 to 1 behind, you know, the Panthers and the Oilers, are you in a game, to use Phil's term, in a sport that can be completely random on things at times, okay? Like, weird stuff can happen, and heck, goalies can just get hot. This is a 20 to 1 team. I struggle with this one, and I am not a homer by any means, but this one to me seems like it's off. And if I'm the Wild, I love it.
How about this, okay? So you want some more shade? You want some more no respect?
Get no
okay?
respect.
This is amazing. All right, I'm on ESPN.com, the ESPN, I believe this is an inside, this is an ESPN Plus article, I think. It's open to the public. It's open. So they have all the first round matchups, and then they've got the schedules, and then they have a series preview blurb.
Okay.
Well, at least for most of the series. So Penguins and Islanders, they've got a full paragraph. While the Penguins' speed could present challenges for New York as it did in the regular season, The Islanders' defensive structure thrives this time of year, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. Capitals, Bruins, right? And you got, okay, let's keep going here. Maple Leafs, Canadiens preview, Avalanche, Blues, and okay, we get to the Golden Knights against the Minnesota Wild. They didn't even bother to write a series preview. Didn't even bother to put a series preview paragraph in it. Can't get a paragraph. Can't get three sentences might happen in the series. No one cares about the Wild. Let's put them at the bottom.
It was set late last night, but I mean, couldn't you have had one set to go? Because I mean, we knew the potential permeations. So I'm taking this though. Like if I don't enjoy gambling, but if I did, I would take this and I would hit this one hard. 20-1. Why not?
Here's the other thing too. Okay. And I get the 20-1. I mean, it's a 2 month, 4 series odds, right? But if you're just looking at the first round,
yep.
I mean, Minnesota has played Vegas very well this year. I don't know. I think this is probably the best, and you guys tell me, but like, this is probably the best possible matchup for Kirill to light the lamp a few times and for the Wild to advance of all the realistic. I mean, between that and Colorado, like, give me this 10 times out of 10 to get out of the first round, right? And that should make the Wild's odds better to begin with. So
I think, I think the way to look at it is, yes, the Wild match up better with Vegas. You're going to have to most likely go through both teams in Vegas and Colorado if you were to make a run to the Stanley Cup. So I can understand the odds being stacked against you a little bit. But if you're looking for an underdog, like the Wild would be the perfect, even if you weren't a Wild fan, like you're a better and you're watching the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. The Stanley Cup playoffs are one of the most entertaining postseasons in all the four major sports. If you were just an outsider and you were an Islanders fan, you were looking to place a bet on an underdog to overcome the odds, I bet the Wild would be the fun one to do. And it has a very good payout too. I don't know what the odds are in just the Vegas Golden Knights series, but if you win that series, then it completely changes the entire course of where this team can go. Like I'm all in if I'm a hockey fan trying to figure out what underdog I can put some money on.
How likely is it, by the way, I'm getting way ahead here because task number one is beat Vegas in a 7-game series, right? But how
the finals
likely
are tough, Phil. The finals are going to be tough.
How likely is it that St. Louis can upset Colorado in the other West Division playoff series and make your path easier if you do get beyond the first
round? Well, two things there. One is, yes, I think the Blues are playing well and they are built for the playoffs. The Blues, to me, are basically very similar to the Kings teams that won back-to-back, or not back-to-back, but that won two cups. Those Kings teams were big and heavy, but they had some speed and they beat you up and had goaltending. If you look at the Blues, they basically are a lot like those teams. And so if you can contain and frustrate the Avs and slow them down, which St. Louis can, I think there's a good chance there, or a decent chance there. Not good, probably decent. But part two of your question is the problem. You got your ass handed you by St. Louis as the Wild all year long, which you can't dismiss.
So would you rather face, I mean, we're way ahead here.
Sure.
Vegas.
Okay.
Like, would you rather face Colorado if you get beyond?
I tweeted two nights ago that I would probably prefer that the Blues beat up the Avs and you face the Blues. But the more I think about this, yeah, you know what? It sounds crazy. I think I would, because you match up so poorly against the Blues. And here's the one thing the Blues did that scared me. The Blues, aside from the unbelievable goal he scored, the X against Binnington, the Blues did a pretty good job, I think, of taking Kaprizov off his game, but they didn't tick him off. Like, he didn't come back. The last game that the Wild played against the Golden Knights tried to intimidate Kaprizov, and he got ticked off, and he came back at them, and we talked about that, and he scored two goals. The Blues did a very good job of subtly removing Kaprizov from the game more. So the more I think about my tweet, I think I was wrong. I think I would prefer to take on a beat-up Avs team Because if the Blues and Avs go six or seven games, Dex, the Avs are going to be beat up. And the one thing is, when the Avs get beat up and MacKinnon gets hurt a lot, if MacKinnon is slightly off his game or frustrated, he becomes a different player at times. So you just had so little success against St. Louis that I'm actually going to pivot and say I'd prefer a Colorado team that has been taken to a long series, is tired, and is not in great shape.
St. Louis can definitely beat them up, beat Colorado up pretty well. But Colorado scares the living hell out of me. I think they're just a better team. And
they are a better team.
I can understand the logic of, well, if St. Louis beats up Colorado in a seven-game series, but Avalanche still move on, but they got whacked and hacked and whatnot, and the Wild also win their series, okay, I can get maybe a little slowed-down version of the Avs that isn't on full strength and isn't on a complete firepower. But if I'm the Wild, I would rather still play St. Louis. I would 100% still play St. Louis. Binnington is volatile. I don't see how the Wild can basically run through Vegas and then run through Colorado. Like that, if they can pull off both those feats, then I'm leading the parade on West and on Kellogg. But I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, I'd rather see St. Louis upset Colorado than you get the Blues. But I'm all for either matchup.
The problem there is if you play the Blues, they are going to beat you up badly, and the Wild doesn't come back at that well. The Avs have great speed, and they're a better team than the Wild, but I feel like the Wild would be, in a long series, more able to combat what Colorado does well than what the Blues do well. And the other thing is, Binnington can get hot, which is really scary. Grubauer, the Avs goaltender, is good, but I feel like there's more ability there for him to melt down a bit. So I'm just saying, I mean, either one is tough. But the problem too, Phil, with these odds don't take into consideration to me at all how teams are built for the playoffs, because the playoffs are different. Like, you could be, I mean, how many times have we seen that, right? Where teams are, oh man, they had a great year and then they get bounced in the first round. The Blues, in the odds that I'm looking at right here that we got yesterday, 28-1. The Blues are built for the playoffs. The Wild has goaltending. A prime example here, the Oilers, 18-1, okay? They've got probably the two best players in the world, but their goaltending could be suspect. So, like, I don't feel these odds are done according to playoffs. I feel that they're done according to regular season success, which doesn't really translate to what you're going to be like in the playoffs, which I don't know why they don't take that into account.
Yeah, and so if you're wondering, what are you guys doing? The first round hasn't even started yet. Listen, we're just telling you who to root for on the other side of the bracket in the first round, and we're just being presumptive about the Wild beating the Golden Knights in five or six games in the first round. Real quick prediction here just on this show. Do the Wild advance beyond the first round, and how many games will the first round take?
I have the Wild winning this series in six. I think the Wild win this series in six games. After that, we're going to go matchup by matchup. I'm not going to go all the way in just yet. But if they win this in six, I think they can. I think they can absolutely win this series in six. It's going to be a grind, though. It's going to be a grind.
I have the Golden Knights in six, but it's going to be a fun series. It should be really competitive. I'm hoping it goes seven personally. I think it goes six. I think the Golden Knights win. But here's the most important question. Declan, who cares? Judd, who cares? Hockey Whisperer. That's what we care about. What does the Hockey Whisperer say?
Oh, let's see. Let's see.
Channel him.
Do I hear him coming?
Find him.
Yes, there he is.
He moves.
The Hockey Whisperer, waiting for the Kraken to come out to the Pacific Northwest. Here's what will happen in the first round, according to the Hockey Whisperer. This will be a back and forth. Actually, you know what? I feel like someone's going to fall down 2-0.
Okay.
But it's still going to go seven games. This is going to be a seven-game series. Someone's falling down 2-0, but it's still going to be a seven-game series. Mm-hmm. And in that game seven, we're going to overtime. And Kevin Fiala will score the game winner for the Minnesota Wild to advance to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Wow.
The Hockey Whisperer has been on hiatus for a long time.
The Hockey Whisperer can't make that prediction without Oda Joy.
I'm sorry. It'll be a Game 7 overtime winner by Kevin Fiala to send the Wild into the second round.
He scores!
What's the next level? That's my question for my guy LaPanta.
He's got to save point, a level. He's got to save a level.
You've got to have, if that happens, you've got to have a place that you can go that you've never gone before.
Why don't you tell him that when you run into him in the press box?
No, in the elevator.
It's not open,
the
elevator.
Me, LaPanta, and Karts uncomfortably riding down in the elevator. Boys. I got to say, Anthony, you gotta have.
Yeah, I got some pointers. Level. Got some pointers for you. I've never been a parent. I've never done play-by-play, but I've got takes on both. Boys, before we get into Action Movie Rewind, just real quick here. Real quick.
Probably not.
Should the Twins fire somebody right now?
Do you want me to start? Because my answer is yes, definitely.
Who should they fire?
1,000%. I've told you this in Write That Down a couple weeks ago. I stand by it. I've got statistics to back it up. The easiest guy, and look, this firing, there are a lot of people that want Rocco out right now, okay? I don't. I am not suggesting that you blow the entire thing up. But I think that you need to wake people up. Like, Phil, your points the past week or so, I think, are spot on. This team's dead ass.
Thank you.
They don't seem to like each other. Like, and I don't know if it's true or not because we're not there. But I think you need to wake people up. And the way that you do that in baseball is you fire the equivalent of the offensive coordinator, the hitting coach. Because that will at least, I mean, right now, here's my problem. Nobody's on notice. Like, nobody. They're falling apart. By the end of yesterday, they had the worst winning percentage in all of baseball, okay? Like, this is not a blip. This is a team that is not as good as we expected, but they shouldn't be this awful.
All right.
So I'm firing somebody.
The Twins do have two hitting coaches. So are you firing Rudy Hernandez or Edgar Varela?
Edgar Varela.
Edgar's gone?
I believe he has the title of the main one.
Would you fire Tommy Watkins, the first base coach, too, just to send a
No, he's the first base coach. I need to fire somebody who actually has a job that is semi-important.
How about Pete? Is it Mackey? M-A-K-I? He's the bullpen coach. No. Bullpen's been pretty crappy this year.
Yeah, but I'm not.
I know that
the
his job
coach.
Is mostly to answer the phone and like.
Can I give you guys a stat quickly here? Five-game trip, because they got rained out on Sunday in Detroit, okay? Five-game trip. They won the opener against the Tigers. They then lost the next four. In those five games, 53 men left on base. Runners in scoring position, including the 0-for-10 yesterday, 11 for 60, a 183 average with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
Fire the hitting coach. Send a message. Do it. Today.
I do feel like firing the hitting coach is such a hollow. We got to do something.
It's a cliche.
People are mad. We got to do something. Sorry, Edgar. Update your LinkedIn profile, bud. You're fired. Like,
do you say
is firing Edgar or is firing Rudy Hernandez going to make Miguel Sano snap out of it? Like, dude, you're a 28-year-old professional baseball player.
No, I'm talking about
figure
guys
out
like,
how to not strike out three times in a game.
No, he's hopeless. I'm talking about anybody who like they're. Right now, the problem is this. There's no accountability at all. Like, they're all just like, okay, cool, we lost again. Oh, that's too bad. Tough start. Tough season so far. It's like, there's no accountability. In 2019, the magic of Rocco was he left the accountability up to the clubhouse. And it was a live and let live, but they were good, and so it completely worked. And at the time, I applauded it. Phil?
Yeah, if you guys want to take BP, yeah. Take BP. If you want to take a nap, take a nap. If you want to stay home for a few hours.
But when the children start to misbehave, hey, look, okay?
Exactly like this show. Look, it's our show.
Look, okay? You might
be right. What's the difference?
Okay, here's the difference. Here's the difference. Phil is the consummate professional, and I'm like, I'm still okay. Like, I can go get the ball. I care about the team.
I'm like Diet Nelson Cruz is what I am. Like, I'm in I'm in bad shape. I'm not going to be in the Hall of Fame, but I come to work every day and I work.
And then there's Diving executive producer Declan J. Cave just doing his best over here to try to keep the show alive.
Yeah, Diving Declan.
Every one out of 10 dives is going to be a damn good catch, but 9 out of 10 are going to be misses.
You're Kyle Garlick, I think, too. There's no accountability, and so, like, you got to do something here. Do you just stand here and take it? Like if you're the Twins.
Sometimes in baseball, you don't have a choice because it's not like a physical exertion effort sport as much. Like people can say, well, Josh Donaldson wasn't running hard. Well, you don't win baseball games by pressing more. Like in football, guys, we need 10% more physical exertion, Herculean effort in the trenches, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basketball, need to pick up the energy to outrun and outwork our opponents. Baseball is such a chess match, and if you just aren't able to, like if you don't have pitchers that can find their spots, if you don't have hitters that can hit with two strikes, you know, all these things that have been wrong for the Twins this year, like definitely hold people accountable. I'm not saying that there's not some move to be made here and that they should just shrug their shoulders and like death march to 100 losses. Like, so I'm with you on that front. I just don't know how much you're going to spark this. Like, this has to come from within the players. If they, like, there's a bunch of good players on this team still. There's flaws, but there's a bunch of good players with track records on this team. If they decide, all right, we're a good team, especially our lineup. Like, we've all had, look at the peak season of everyone in that lineup. And you could argue that, like, all of them are, you know, top 10 MVP vote seasons if you look at, like, the best season of Kepler and the best season of Polanco, right?
Sure.
If they decide they want to band together and dig out of this thing, okay, I just don't know. I honestly don't know if they do. This doesn't look like this doesn't look like the Red Sox from 15 years ago drinking shots together and, you know, like banding together. It just doesn't feel that way.
But doesn't having no accountability for your actions embolden you to go in that direction?
You're saying if you fire the hitting coach that they're going to like band together?
No, I'm saying right now there are no repercussions to what's going on. And I'm willing to bet that a guy like Cruz has said a few weeks ago, guys, we got to pick this up. Like, let's go. It's go time. And they're all like, they're clearly all like, yeah, okay, maybe. So I feel like it's a great idea to leave your employees to their own devices if they're succeeding and it's on track.
Yeah.
But this isn't, and it's just simply like day after day, Groundhog Day. Oh, we're back at the ballpark. Another loss.
Yeah. And I think my gut says, I don't know. Like you can do some things to hold some people accountable. Like you can say, listen, hey, we had expectations, and so someone's got to feel it, even if it's a scapegoat firing. And I wouldn't oppose that. You know, do what you got to do. I just don't know if the DNA of this can be fixed until much later, like trade deadline or off season. It just doesn't feel right.
It's fair.
Doesn't feel right. Oof. So, I don't know.
We're gonna win Twins. We're gonna score. We're gonna win Twins.
And hey, you know, talking Twins every day on this show, we're giving you in-depth breakdowns. We're still grinding it every single day. These clowns might not be, but all of our Twins discussions are powered by, you want to talk about true professionals, Dennis Kirk. Mm. Dennis Kirk's not 12 games below 500 or whatever. Dennis Kirk's at the top of their game. If you like to ride Harleys, sport bikes, you name it, you'll find what you need at DennisKirk.com. 160,000 parts and accessories in stock, clothing and helmets as well. Order before 8 p.m. and they ship the same day. We need to get Judd in some riding gear, some chaps or something.
Oh, I look good in chaps.
I think you look great in chaps.
I look good in chaps, yeah. Yeah.
Best in the business, DennisKirk.com. Everything you need for your ride at DennisKirk.com. All right, boys. Let's get to the feature attraction here.
All right.
The feature attraction. A little action movie rewind.
What are they saying? Luke Su Tao! White Warrior!
Movie reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
Hey, you want brother alive?
My brother.
Make crowd happy. Let Tom Paul punish you all the rounds. You must last to the end. Or brother die very slowly. You... understand? Huh?
Go home! Wait your 3 months and go home where you're safe! I don't want your blood on my hands! I got enough already!
He's going to pay for this. You hear me?
I'll find him. I don't need your help.
The only way you'll find him is inside the ring, and you are not good enough!
No matter where, I'll get him.
You don't understand. You go after him outside the ring, and we're dead, all of us! He's too valuable to them! The only way is inside the ring. And like I said, you ain't good enough!
We'll see.
Oh, my God. All right. Welcome to Action Movie Rewind here. Mackie and Judd, it's our movie review franchise. It all started with Action Movie Rewind. We also have a collection of rom-com rewinds and sports movie rewinds. You can find them all. At some point, I think we'll consolidate. We'll go back. We'll just make a weekend out of it or something. And we'll put them all in a feed. But right now, go back any Friday, basically, over the last 14 months, and you'll find us breaking down movies. And gentlemen, we've landed on Kickboxer, 1989, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. Here's the summary. Eric Sloan, by the way, played by Dennis Alexia, who is a real-life kickboxing champion. Eric Sloan is an American kickboxing pro, helped by his brother, Kurt, in his quest for glory. Kurt, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme. But when the two go to Thailand to take on legendary Tong Po, the opponent viciously beats Eric and leaves him paralyzed in the ring. Swearing vengeance, Kurt tracks down Master Zhan Chao and begins learning the sport of Muay Thai himself, while also getting caught up in criminal intrigue involving thuggish crime boss Freddie Lee. 36% on Rotten Tomatoes. There was no critics' consensus on RottenTomatoes.com.
It's because they all left the movie early.
This was a $2.7 million budget turned into $50 million at the box office, and it led to multiple sequels that didn't involve Jean-Claude Van Damme. So real quick, the sequels involved, can't remember the actor's name, but he played, I want to say, Cody in Step by Step, the weird brother who was like in the camper outside. That guy played the third sibling that they never mentioned in Kick, but they needed, all right, Jean-Claude's not coming back. We could either have someone else just like play the Jean-Claude character, or we could say, no, they had another brother, and he also needs to avenge things as a kickboxer. So maybe at some point we'll dive into all the sequels. But for now, Judd, let's start with you.
No, please, God, don't do that to me.
What was your main takeaway from Kickboxer?
Oh, my gosh. Oh. So my main takeaway from Kickboxer. I wrote down a lot of things about this film. First of all, this film is 1991. Is that correct? Is that what
1989.
You said?
1989.
Okay. So this film clearly took the Jean-Claude Van Damme phenom and applied it to Karate Kid. Cause like this reminded me of Karate Kid as far as like the bad guy vengeance. Now it was a different storyline as far as in Danielson's case, it was not his brother. He didn't even have one, but he still, you know, he trained with the veteran guy who was skeptical of his commitment to train.
Yeah. And then you have like the weird training methods that you don't know you're training, but you're really training.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. My other takeaway from this film is of all the films, and we have done a lot of action films, and we have done, it feels like, a lot from the decade of the 80s. I don't think there was one that loved the montage as much as Kickboxer.
Fight for love!
To the point where, and I
everybody
get it.
Loves a winner.
Jean-Claude Van Damme can't act his way out of a paper bag, so it definitely helps to do the montage so we don't have to hear him trying to recite his lines, you guys. But it was to the point of where this film was not that long. It felt to me like it took forever.
Yeah. My main takeaways are very similar. I have two main takeaways from this movie. Number one, I literally wrote down, this movie was a cross and a ripoff of Karate Kid and Rocky IV.
Yep.
So Rocky IV, although they went the, you know, Rocky IV, what they should have done here is, The brother should have been killed in the ring.
I've got questions.
That's what should have happened.
And I've got questions about that.
The fact that he only got paralyzed, and then by the end, like 3 weeks later, he's just like,
"Ha, go brother!"
He's just pretty much fine mentally and physically. He's in a wheelchair, but
they take him out to the woods to that camp, like, and he's wheeling around like it's no. He's just like,
that was a tough break.
Paralyzed,
bro.
But I mean, he's wheeling his wheelchair around in like the woods, basically.
Yeah.
Like you would need ramps and stuff.
I know. They all go in the house. Like, come on, let's go in the house. And he's like the last one still outside. Like, what? Like, is there a ramp? Who's helping this guy get up into the house?
I know.
They're all just hanging out. Yeah, let's go make. I'll make my famous specialty, like jungle eggs and whatever. And then my other main takeaway was this movie was three fights and then an hour of Jean-Claude Van Damme just wandering throughout the woods, throughout the city of Bangkok in pleated khakis to weird music.
With a weird love story.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Like, there's the weird love story. Yeah, yep. But I mean, what was the, like, I got done and I literally said, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, what was that film?
Yep. Declan, what was your main takeaway?
My main takeaway was this is everything we should be looking for in Action Movie Rewind. This is everything we should be looking for. It took me a while to grasp the concept of Action Movie Rewind. It might be the biggest hurdle I had in the transition. Now we've been a year in through this new changes at Score North, was grasping what are we looking for? What's the idea? What's the concept? There was butting of heads, and now I get it. I've gotten over the majority of the time. But I will say, now that we're a year into me being part of these Action Movie Rewinds, that this is everything we should be looking for. The acting is horrible. It's some of the worst acting ever. There's cheesy love dynamics that make no bleeping sense. Weird violence. And then just a sprinkle, and maybe I'm underselling a sprinkle of vulgar, ridiculous, over-the-top ending that we have. And I said that last week about Cobra, that the last 15 minutes was, wow, this saved the movie. I don't know if the last 15 minutes saves the movie, but it definitely puts a whole new layer on this film because, oh my God, that last 10 to 15 minutes fight scene with all the other dialogue that's happening was absurd. So my main takeaway is this is everything we should be looking for in an action movie rewind.
All right. And we'll definitely get to more about the last 15 minutes, but let's go back to Judd here. What was your favorite thing about Action Movie Rewind Kickboxer?
Okay, part of the charm of this film to me, which I absolutely think is hilarious, is this. In Karate Kid, the mentor who, you know, was in Happy Days and clearly, if he chose to, spoke perfect English, uses an accent, you know, just because he's supposed to be, you know, from. So that made perfect sense. Exactly. In this film, everybody in this foreign country basically lived in Los Angeles or, I don't know, Arizona or something. Like, nobody used an accent. You could understand them all perfectly. It's like they all lived in this foreign country and they're all like, hey, what's going on, man? What's going on? Do you really want to fight this fight? I am a trained sensei from way back when. My family's never been to America. I mean, everyone had a it was hilarious. They decided that it would be easier to have no problems with, like, I don't know, understanding. I don't have any clue. But nobody really had an accent.
Well, then there's the most glaring accent storyline question mark is the fact that these two kickboxers are brothers, and they did explain this for like 3 seconds in the middle of the movie. But these two guys are brothers. One of them has like a New York or Los Angeles accent, and the other one has an Eastern European Belgium accent.
I was born in Belgium. He said, "Yeah, I was born in Belgium."
And so they had that. They probably figured at some point. I'm guessing it was the last thing they filmed. They were like, "Oh, it is kind of weird that they're brothers and one guy has a weird accent and the other guy doesn't, and they look nothing alike."
That's what I was going to say.
Nothing alike at all.
One guy looks like, yeah.
And so he's explaining to his love interest, Jean-Claude Van Damme, at one point, my parents got divorced, and, you know, one kid went to America and the other went to Belgium, and then we somehow reconnected later in life. I don't know. Like, they just glossed past this.
But I mean,
they
so clearly didn't care about so many different things. That's why I'm confused. Like, what did I watch?
Dex, what was your favorite part of Kickboxing?
A couple things. The 80s montages are phenomenal. I mean, I'm not even a big 80s music guy. I'm really not. I don't get down with the 80s. I obviously missed the generation there, being born in the 90s.
I love me some 90s
grunge. I love me some classic early 2000s hip-hop. I love emo music from the mid-2000s. I could go on an entire tirade of my musical selections that a lot of other older generations would love to throw me in the fire for. But 80s, these 80s montages are fantastic.
The whole movie. It's just him in pleated khakis. Just wandering around to weird 80s soundtracks.
I also loved the character Taylor. I think Taylor was absolutely awesome.
I think he's the
van driver.
And if I can't stop you, I might know somebody who'll train you.
Someone? Maybe.
There's only one person crazy enough to put you in a ring with a tonfo.
Name's Ian.
Lives out in the sticks.
Will he do it?
I don't have any idea. That's your problem.
I just know how to find him.
Let's go. And what if he doesn't take?
He will. Let's go. No.
Now? Now. We're going drinking now.
I don't want to drink.
If you want me to take you tomorrow, we go drinking tonight.
We're going drinking tonight.
That's the deal.
I love Taylor. And he's got like, you know, I think in, like, you get a good backstory and they go to that strip club and he's like, yeah, I was in Vietnam and then I ended up just staying over here. And then he like basically is this like weird mercenary, not bounty hunter, but like basically mercenary who then at the end of the film shows up with all the guns and whatnot and helps get his brother back. I love Taylor. I think he was my favorite part.
They actually did explain that though, because he said when they're going out in the bar that he had a friend who saved him a few times. And then when it came time to save his friend, Taylor choked. He choked and his friend died. Yeah. And so now he comes back at the end and avenges what he missed out on the last time.
All right, let's get into it. Cause my favorite part of this movie was the last 15 minutes. This is one of those movies where if it picks up as they're dipping their rope gloves with glue on the back of them into broken shards of glass, like I am in for the rest of that movie. And so you had, just to explain it, you had these two fighters, instead of having a traditional kickboxing match, they went back to like the old warrior Muay Thai days to settle a personal score between the two of them. And so they dip, they instead of wearing gloves, they get their hands wrapped in rope, which is obviously going to hurt you way more than a glove will hurt you. And then they dip their hands in hot glue and then in shards of glass, and they fight. And I have so many questions off this, but let's start with the first one. If UFC promoted a fight on pay-per-view where both fighters are going to have glass shard gloves instead of regular gloves, would you guys pay to watch it?
No.
Would you have any interest in watching it?
I don't
really
think I could.
Zero. You know, yeah, in real life, I couldn't watch it.
I don't think so.
I did some YouTube searching just to see, is this a thing? And I could only find a couple articles on the internet about what's called original Muay Thai. So original Muay Thai was very brutal, even deadly. There were no weight categories and few rules, and there was also no padding or protection, and fighters wrapped their hands in either strips of horsehide or hemp rope to protect their hands and cause their opponent maximum damage. And if both fighters agreed, they would sometimes dip their hands in a type of glue and then dip their hands in broken glass to cause severe cuts and bleeding during the fight. Fighters would wrap their ankles with cotton wrap and either wear coconut shells or triangular pillows for groin protection. In those days, many fighters died in the ring, especially from knees and elbows, but I couldn't find like any video evidence of this. But at one point in this fight, it took him a while to use the glass shards, but Tong Po starts like using the back of his hands for like six or seven strikes on Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he bloodies him up. And then there's that scene where he delivers like 15 or 20 just like straight up unprotected punches right to Jean-Claude Van Damme's head. This would kill any man after like 10 of them, right?
He's barely hurt.
He literally just like gets back up. Oh, the round is over. He gets back up and just goes and sits down and takes a deep breath with like a little blood on his cheek. It's like, what?
I know.
What? This guy has glass shard hands and he's the best fighter in the world.
So
what?
My question off of that was, did they run out of fake blood on the film?
I don't know.
Like he would be pummeled. Like at least he has to be massively bleeding. And he's like got like a paper cut.
Well, we'll get to some, actually, you know, let me read this because it goes long. critical response from Wikipedia, all right? Chris Willman of the Los Angeles Times called the film egregiously dull and a contender for one of the dumbest action pictures of the year. A dog's barking back here.
Like Kickboxer.
Citing its jarring shifts in tone, insurmountable plot implausibilities, rampant racial stereotyping, superfluous nudity, and inhumane amounts of comically exaggerated violence. And that last part, like, fits the last fight, right? Like, what do you, like, he would have been dead after 10 of those punches. Willman also questioned the manner in which the character seemed to recover from serious injuries and major trauma. Yeah.
I'd say so. That's accurate.
So, all right, Judd, your least favorite part about Kickboxer.
Oh, boy. There are a lot of these. Let me see here. I got a couple things. One is the amount of Jean-Claude training scenes, okay? I didn't need 18 of them. Like, I could have gotten by with a couple. Like, I get it. Here's the thing, too. So he was chiseled, you know, I mean, but he wasn't like, it wasn't like looking at some Adonis where you're like blown away by.
He's doing the splits. He's jumping in the air.
I know, but they kept doing it. And it's like, okay, but he's not that impressed. Like,
what?
Like, he's not that impressive.
What?
Like, do you know how many scenes they did of him training with 80s music on? I didn't need all that. And my second thing that I didn't like, too, and it was both implausible and I didn't like it. I don't care how many people you kill in a film. Don't hurt a dog.
Yeah, like
dog that gets hit with the knife. And then the damn dog is at the match at the end. He like shows up fine. That dog would be dead.
Up,
and
yeah.
The dog is alive. We have to get it to the doctor right away. But don't hurt animals. I don't like it. I don't
hurt some animals. Just not.
I don't. Well, don't hurt pets. How about that, Declan?
Okay.
Don't hurt pets in films. I don't need it. Like, there was no reason for it.
It's fair.
Those are my two.
A fair point. Was it a knife wound?
Yeah, he threw a knife into the dog.
I remember they showed it, and it was like very obviously they had like. Yeah. Put one of those like fake Halloween costume knives that looks like it's going in the side of your head, and they just put it in the back of the dog. With like plastic blood coming out. Yeah, just a quick cutaway so nobody knows. All right, Declan, your least favorite part of Kickboxer?
I mean, the acting, the act, and even though it kind of like helps with our action movie rewind theme, the acting is horrible, especially the brother to brother meetup that we talked about earlier in the park.
You know, Eric. Mom, she was a very special lady, too. She wanted me to learn three languages, to take ballet. Before I learned karate, I really miss her.
I wish they would have been there to see me win the championship.
Well, big brother, they could never get along. But I'm glad we do. They'd be proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right, kid.
It is a painful scene to get through. Painful.
It's worse to listen to it without seeing them. It makes it even worse. That's right.
It is. It is just god awful. The acting in it is pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad. I think, speaking of bad acting, I think my least favorite part about this movie, there's a few of them, but the dancing and bar scene where Trainer takes him to the bar, just like this weird, seedy bar, and gets him drunk on shots, doesn't explain anything, just keeps feeding him shots, and Jean-Claude Van Damme just kind of going along with it. And then he asks him, are you good at dancing? Can you dance? And Jean-Claude's like, yeah, I'm a good deal. Why are you asking me? And so he gets up. He makes Jean-Claude get up, and then he looks over for the nearest gal. There's just this gal sitting in a booth all by herself. Just like staring. Trainer grabs her by the arm and like picks her up out of the booth. And she's just like, okay, yes, I go, you know, I'm going to dance with the American guy now. And so he's dancing with these gals. The whole thing was so weird. And I'm just thinking, like, was there not a different way? So he's trying to get him drunk and then fight all these other fighters to get on the radar to go fight, you know, in a ring at some point. Was there not like another way to do that in the movie? I don't know. The whole thing was uncomfortable and weird, but now it's one of the most prominent gifs on the internet.
Yeah, I never
in weird khakis and a tank top, a suspender tank top. Yeah. By the way, did you guys see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
I never knew that. I've seen that gif and I've seen that meme around in the last obviously like 7-8 years that social media's really blown up here. I never knew it was from this movie. Like there's always that other Quinn Stanley, the meme of like, oh, that's what this is from. That was me when I watched like, oh, that's what he, when he's doing that little goofy dance. I was like, I had no idea that's from this movie.
You know, I figured out, I think, like last summer, I want to say, during, I was just watching movies because everyone was just sitting inside watching movies last summer. And I watched that Jack Johnson movie. I think it's Robert Redford plays Jack Johnson, just like an outdoor mountain man. And I realized, oh, this is that meme where zoom in on the bearded guy with the raccoon cap.
Yep. Yeah.
I always thought it was Zach Galifianakis because it looks like Zach Galifianakis. No, it's Robert Redford.
Redford looks fat, and he was never fat. That's
he
said
a huge, he had
it.
A huge beard.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anywho.
All right. All right. Judd, what was the least believable thing for you in this movie?
Beginning to end? okay, there was a lot of things. But the one that I wrote down is that Eric... So the brother who is paralyzed, which, again, I'm with you, Phil. He should have been killed, but he's paralyzed. That he would that after he recovers, and by the way, it was supposed to take, you know, months and months. After he recovers, he and his brother just stay in Thailand, especially Eric. Like, he's paralyzed. He needs to go home and get care in the
U.S. But he wants to go home. He wants to go home, and Kurt wants to fight Tong Po.
I know, but he's unwilling, like... At that point in time, somebody needs to come get Eric and take him home. And if Jean-Claude wants to fight Tong Po, that's fine. But that he would just that he, instead he's like rolling around on in his wheelchair in the woods, and he's like going to the fight, and he's getting kidnapped, but he's fine to get to the fight. Like, the whole thing with the brother made no sense. And the easiest answer would have been just kill him. Because if he's dead, then that's fine. The storyline goes on. And by the way, the film, which is about Jean-Claude Van Damme, he can avenge his brother's death. Like, keeping him alive, unless it was for the scene at the end where he's sort of kidnapped, but then he shows up, it was completely unnecessary. And like, the guy would stay in Thailand.
A quick side question. I feel like, just from like a health insurance standpoint, I'd be a little nervous that random Bangkok clinic that helped like with my severe spinal cord injury would be out of network, and I'd wind up paying, you know, $500,000 for,
which is another reason to get out of the country so you don't have to pay it.
But you're right, it was sort of a weird, unnecessary storyline at the end where the brother gets kidnapped, and then they're like what's the point of him getting kidnapped? Like,
well, yeah, oh, it's. So the point, but it was unnecessary, was that Jean-Claude Van Damme's character is going to take a dive to Tom, which Tong Po is kicking the crap out of him because his brother's kidnapped and they've threatened to kill him.
But why would he need to take a dive? He's never been a professional fighter before. Wouldn't Tong Po just like be confident that he's going to beat this amateur?
Well, yeah, but that's the thing, is at the end, then when Eric comes in his wheelchair, and Jean-Claude sees him, he can then unleash his fury because there's no threat of potential retribution. I'm trying to explain what I saw, okay? You're right. I'm not disagreeing with you one bit.
This movie also is pretty much the same as Bloodsport. Like, almost everything about this movie is the same as Bloodsport. Yep. All right. For me, least believable thing was just the entire sequence of the fight in Thailand, like how they got there. So the movie starts with Eric is winning the championship or defending it, and as he's walking out of the ring, we get reporters swarming him and asking him questions. You've beat everyone there is to beat. What's next, champ? And, you know, my brother and I are going to go to, you know, I got my brother in my corner now. And then the one, by the way, the guy that asked the Thailand question is the director of the movie making a cameo.
Oh, right. In there. I did not know that. That's awesome.
And he comes in and said, awesome. You know, what about, why don't you go to Thailand? Why don't you go to Thailand and, you know, fight some of the best fighters in the world? And then his answer to that question is like, Thailand, Tokyo, where he like names a bunch of Asian countries and says, I don't care where it is, I'll beat anyone anywhere, right? And then the next scene, they're just in Thailand. So that one-off comment by a random reporter, and they're just like, yo, that guy's right. Let's just go to Thailand and fight people that we've never scouted.
Yeah.
So they get to Thailand, and right off the bat, like instead of scouting or training, Eric is hooking up with prostitutes and his brother's like, oh, just make sure you're ready for the fight in a week.
Classic.
He's like,
brother,
I'll be ready. So I don't know, the whole thing is like no scouting, nothing. He gets his ass kicked and paralyzed by Tong Po, and then The medics take him out on a stretcher. He's paralyzed, and they just dump him out on the sidewalk and close the gate. Like, the whole thing was just
ridiculous. Who set the fight up?
Right.
He's the U.S. champ, so I'm sure he could.
Underground fighting ring. They take him out in the street on the stretcher, set him down, and close the garage door.
It's amazing. All right. Least believable thing,
dude.
Declan.
The romance with Miley makes zero sense and has no foundation to it whatsoever.
What do you mean, no foundation?
No foundation. Right. There's no foundation to this romance. Yeah.
They sparked when he went into her store.
Sparked? There was no spark there. There was a bunch of thugs, and she was even like against, like, no, let them have the money, blah blah blah. And then he leaves. You know, like 20 minutes later, they leave the training facility, and she's just like on her little weird moped, and then they just like start making out for no like. There wasn't even some sentimental thing said. There was no smooth line from Claude Dam. They just start kissing. It and then all of a sudden they're just in this romance together. And then he's getting his ass kicked in the last 15 minutes, and there's some motivation that gets him to really step up his game, but it makes zero sense. Their entire romance makes zero sense through the course of this film. There's no foundation. I don't get it.
And it's not really necessary.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't do anything for the movie.
And
you didn't need it.
This movie, Kickboxer, has lots of holes in it, and I still find this to be the least believable part, is the romance. It by far makes no sense.
You don't think she'd be infatuated with this chiseled American kickboxer?
No.
Who's got a little sense of humor and can dance a little bit, looks pretty good in pleated khakis with no shirt? Oh.
Yeah.
I will say, in terms of outfits, when he wasn't wearing the pleated khakis, at the very beginning, one of his outfits, I think when they got to Thailand, he had jeans and then a jean vest with no undershirt. Which was a great look.
The 80s, man.
Yeah, dude.
The 80s took its toll on wardrobes.
Yeah. All right, before we get to definitive bad guy rankings and the overall ranking for the movie, any other final just thoughts or topics or questions that we didn't cover that you guys want to get into here?
I thought the amount of terrible lines that Jean-Claude had and how he delivered them horribly was actually glorious. Like, it's clear that he had these. That's the one thing that I will give Stallone in the Rocky films. In the Rocky films, he's sort of a different guy. And the acting in those films exclusively is not bad lots of times. Like, it's corny, but it's not awful. This guy's inability in a franchise that really was supposed to feature him for sure, inability to deliver a simple line without it sounding like he was in sixth grade is impressively bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's he's better off in montages and in fight scenes. And the less dialogue, the better. All right, definitive bad guy rankings. So we've done, I don't know, 50 of these action movie rewinds, and we rank the bad guys sort of based on three main criteria. How iconic are they? How ruthless are they? And how charismatic are they? So the top bad guys to this point that we've reviewed are the Terminator, Hans Gruber from Die Hard, Michael Myers from Halloween, Cyrus the Virus from Con Air, Simon Phoenix from Demolition Man, Brad Wesley from Roadhouse, and Cobra Kai from Karate Kid. In the middle, I'm going to give you the middle section here.
Sure.
Victor Maitland from Beverly Hills Cop, the Scorpio Killer from Dirty Harry, Hertz from Shoot 'Em Up, Lord Humongous from Mad Max 2, Mola Ram from Indiana Jones, and then toward the bottom, Max Dent is the worst one we've reviewed, from Beverly Hills Cop 2, Incompetent Russian Military from Rambo 3, and the Muggers from Death Wish. I'm just going to say, Chong Li from Bloodsport is like 12th from the bottom. He is more iconic in my mind in that movie than Tong Po is in Kickboxer. I think they should be right next to each other, with Tong Po one notch below Chong Li.
I'm fine with that.
Unless you guys have a strong opinion.
No, because the bad guy here was also the Mafia. So, like, it was more than one person.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think putting him a notch below Chong Li is fine.
That would also put him right next to the Night Slasher from Cobra.
Yeah.
Last week's villain.
I'm fine with
that. I think so. He's a pretty horrible guy.
He's ruthless.
Yeah.
he's a little iconic because Kickboxer is an iconic movie, and I think Bloodsport, they're basically the same movie, just like a year apart. So
yeah,
but he's
fine.
He's certainly not on the Hans Gruber or Cyrus the Virus level, right?
Yeah.
And Chong Li was actually snapping necks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was snapping necks.
He was.
This guy was brutal, but I don't think I saw him snap a neck.
You don't think he did he kill anybody?
I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
He
Why
didn't kill
they
anybody?
And I mean, he could have.
Did anyone die in this? Well, yeah, there's some people died at the end, like in the shootout scenes. But
right, but as far as
in the ring,
in the ring, yeah. So mm-hmm. I think it's a very fair ranking. I'm
right
it.
Now we get to the 1 through 10 overall enjoyment.
Oh boy,
experience for this movie. The only 3 perfect 10s we've given out are Terminator, Die Hard, and Halloween. Taken, John Wick, Commando, and Beverly Hills Cop are all a 9 or above. And then toward the bottom here, the worst movies we've reviewed, all of these are below a 4. Demolition Man, Kindergarten Cop, Shoot 'Em Up, Bloodsport, Mad Max 2, Wanted. Smack dab in the middle, Die Hard 2, Lethal Weapon, Casino Royale, Karate Kid, Speed, True Lies, and Out for Justice. Those are all between like a 6.7 and a 7.8. So we'll start with Judd. 1 through 10, your level of enjoyment watching this movie.
Probably disappointing to you boys, but I'm going to give this movie a 2.
What?
It gets a 2. It was hilarious, but it was too long. The montages, you could have cut out a few of them at least. This film, I agree with Declan. This film qualifies for a lot of things. But I can't look past the fact that the main guy who was given the lines to deliver in this film was best off not talking. This would have been a great silent film.
It was like an hour and a half movie that did feel like it was 2 hours or more. It could have been a 40-minute movie.
But I don't recall throughout the course of this exercise that we've done, I don't recall feeling like a film that was in actuality this short, because it was not long, felt this long. Like ordinarily 2 hours, yes, I get bored. But this one, my God. And the end scene too, like the brother has to show up, so we got to keep going. So I'm giving it a 2. Sorry.
Wow, Declan.
It's a 7. I truly enjoyed this film despite it being so bad and the acting being hilarious. It was awesomely bad. It was so bad that it works. I was entertained throughout the entire course of this film. For me, it is easily a 7. It's a 7 out of 10.
Wow. So a 2 and a 7.
I love where this is going. This is fun.
Before I unveil my score, my rating of this movie is powered by Federated Mutual Insurance Company.
Why couldn't mine have been? I wanted mine to be powered by Federated.
So Federated has been helping businesses with risk management and with peace of mind. Obviously the in the state of Minnesota, the CDC and the governor are lifting the mandatory mask mandate. So this might mean changes in policy for your company. If you need to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row from a communication standpoint, from a policy standpoint, Federated can help you. Federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. It's a 5 for me, dog. It's a 5.
Wow. Okay.
Not a disaster.
Okay.
Honestly, before I watched this, I watched it last year because I confused parts of this movie with Bloodsport during the Bloodsport review, I remember. I watched both those movies in the same week.
What? What's wrong with you?
I thought that I would rate this higher going in, but then watching it, it was like there's literally like 30 or 40 minutes in the middle of this movie that are just completely – they drag. It's unnecessary. So, wow. I love the end. I love the corniness. I love the 80s vibe. It's a 5. It's not a disaster. So that gives it a 4.7 composite score, tied with Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, and Tango and Cash, right above Rambo 3. There it is.
God, this movie was so much better than all those films. It's not even close.
Dude, this is how I felt. Bloodsport was a 3. I gave Bloodsport like an 8.
All right.
And everyone else gave it like a 1 or a 2.
All right, so this is
there's movies on this list. Also, Air Force One got a 5. I think that was Rami bringing it down. Air Force One, that movie's amazing.
I did not denigrate Air Force One. That was not me for sure.
I don't get it.
You know what? So, if they had killed the brother in that fight, I think I give it a higher score. I think torturing that storyline got to me.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, there's no reason why he needed – he got paralyzed. And the motivation for fighting Tong Po is that he got paralyzed. And by the end of the movie, he was, like, happy and cheering and
– But like you said, he just rolled in all, and he was just fine.
Right.
Like, dude, you're paralyzed. Your spinal cord was, like – it was bleeping split apart, and you're just like, oh, okay, cool.
I like how Jean-Claude Van Damme also almost tried to kill the doctor that gave him the news. You will fix it.
Yeah.
You will fix it. He like grabs him by the throat. All right. So for next week, gentlemen, we've got two movies. We had four movies in our initial starter bin here as we restarted Action Movie Rewind. Rush Hour and Predator. I think let's stay in the same era here. Let's stay in the 80s before we move into the 90s again. I think Predator was 80s or 1990, somewhere in there. I think it was mid-80s.
Yep.
So let's do Predator, get our guy Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the mix.
Hell yeah.
And round out his classic group of films. We've done like four Arnold movies or something like that. So Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger next week.
107, Judd, runtime, 107.
Oh, no, it's great. Yep. I've seen it. Okay. This is going to pay off.
Yeah, I love Predator.
I've never seen Predator.
Predator's great.
You've never seen it? Mm-hmm. Oh, you'll like it. Oh, I love Predator. Okay. Yep, good stuff.
Awesome. Well, that's a wrap on Action Movie Rewind and Mackie and Judd. Don't forget Wild playoffs this weekend. Judd's hockey show will be all over it when the Wild jump out to a 1-0 series lead, most likely. So, be sure to be subscribed to our Score North MN YouTube channel for all sorts of Wild discussions going forward for as long as they remain in the playoffs. All right, guys. See ya.